Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotter in Washington, D.C.
You know, the president will be able to reshuffle of this cabinet members that he has appointed because they don't just make sense, you know, and there's no way that the country is going to benefit if you don't put the right people in the right ministry.
Nigerian President Bola Tinubu plans to swear in minister designates on Monday.
The program is intended to sensitize our people to raise awareness about protecting their votes on October 10.
Liberia's main opposition Unity Party plans to launch a campaign this week to raise funds.
The purpose of the meeting over the past 2 days was to come out with a solid agreement between the opposition party to remove the government that has failed our country and its people.
And leading opposition parties in South Africa form a coalition to wrest power from the ruling ANC. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Nigeria, President Bola Tinubu is expected to swear in minister designates on Monday. This after the individuals went through the Senate confirmation process. But Deji Adeyanju, the convener of the political pressure group Concern Nigeria for the Protection of Human Rights and Rule of Law, says he is not entirely impressed with some of the ministers. He's calling on the president to reshuffle his ministers to ensure he has a competent team to address the challenges facing the country. Deji Adeyanju tells me that although he has some high-profile and qualified people in his cabinet, some of the designated ministers do not inspire confidence.
Basically, one expects that for a nation that is, you know, underdeveloped, a nation that is saddled with so many challenges, one expects ministers and people that run the government to be of higher standard, possible standard. Because even advanced and developed nations in the world, you know, they go to their best, they rely on their best brains. And that's why when you begin to find a teacher, somebody that is a teacher as Minister for Defense, then somebody that doesn't even have any qualification as Minister for Defense for State, you know, you become worried. And these are people that insecurity plagued their states. They had no ideas on how to solve it, you know, and we're in a precarious situation as a nation. Then again, secondly, it's also worrisome when you begin to find other people, you know, who are not, who their CV speaks differently on several issues, manning sensitive positions of government.
Are you saying that some of the designated ministers are square pegs in round holes? Is that what you are alluding to?
Absolutely. That is what I'm alluding to. That is exactly what I'm alluding to. For if not for the few rays of hope, you know, in on the list, it appears that President Tinubu just did a raffle draw with almost all the other nominees.
Some of his defenders are saying that these are political appointments and they are technocrats in the various ministries who could help those he has appointed to man those ministries effectively. Yeah. So why do you differ?
If it's so, why doesn't he appoint a mechanic as the Minister of Finance? Why has he appointed the technocrat there? So defenders, we always defend. That doesn't make anything they are defending legitimate. All right.
What are your expectations of this new government following the appointment that he has made that he will be swearing in on Monday?
Yeah, basically the expectation is that, you know, the president will be able to reshuffle some of these cabinet members that he has appointed because they don't just make sense, you know, and there's no way that the country is going to benefit if you don't put the right people in the right ministry.
Are you asking the president to begin a reshuffle, even though he will swear them in on Monday before he even start, he should reshuffle these ministers?
Yes, that's the call we are making, that we want the president to commence the cabinet reshuffle immediately, even before they take the oath of office on Monday. Because, you know, it is never too early or too late to do what is right. And there's no substitute for doing what is right. How does the president not feel happy appointing Fagbemi SAN as Minister for Justice? You know, so there is always something good when you do the right thing. it does not make any sense for you to appoint people who are not qualified into a position, especially when the country is in dire need of extreme reforms.
So what is the message here to the people of Nigeria?
Our message is simple, like what we say. Citizens have a responsibility to challenge government, you know, at all times. And I think Lamido Sanusi was just re-echoing our age-long principle just recently. It is when citizens fail to discharge their duties as citizens that leaders, you know, go haywire and misbehave. In America and developed nations all over the world, where citizens are alive to their responsibilities, leaders don't get the luxury to misbehave. You know, so Nigerian citizens must wake up, you know, and do their needful and hold leaders accountable at all levels, including even the competent ministers that have been appointed. That is the square peg in square holes. Citizens must still hold them accountable.
Deji Adeyanju is the convener of the political pressure group Concern Nigeria for the Protection of Human Rights and Rule of Law. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. In Liberia, the main opposition Unity Party plans to launch a campaign this week to raise funds and to teach its supporters how to protect their vote in the coming general election. Representatives of the party say it will ensure that voter irregularities and rigging are reduced. Liberians go to the polls on October 10 to elect a new president, House of Representatives, and half of the Senate. Incumbent President George Weah is seeking re-election. Muhammad Ali is the General Secretary of the Unity Party. He tells me that it's committed to wresting power.
The program is intended to sensitize our people to raise awareness about protecting their votes on October 10. And we've tested that before during the senatorial election, and it worked very well. And so we are beginning this campaign on August 24. We will start it at the Unity Party's campaign headquarters, and then we'll move throughout Monserrado, which is the most populated county, which holds about 35% of the voting population, and we will extend that to other parts of the country. So basically, when elections are held, every political party has poll watchers at every polling center. And these poll watchers, you have to cater for them. So the campaign is aimed at raising funds to pay, to cater towards those that will be manning the polls for us.
What do you mean protecting the vote? Are you anticipating that there could be voter irregularities during the October polls?
Peter, if election goes on here, cheating starts, irregularity starts at the polling center. If a major political party does not have representations at the polling centers, the people we call poll watchers, there is a tendency that people, even polling staff, can connive with the parties that have representation there and easily change results. And nobody is going to know that. So we have this as part of our culture, where every political party, particularly contending political parties for the presidency or key legislative positions, have at least two persons at every polling center, and one at a time within the polling center, in order to take stock of what's happening. So when the votes are counted, they take stock, they remain there until the ballot papers are placed in the ballot box and sealed, and they all copy the sealed number. So that when anything changes there, the first thing they do is compare the sealed number. If you broke the seal and put another seal on it, everyone will know that you've done something. So it is very, very important to have a poll watcher at each polling center.
So what makes you sure that you are going to defeat incumbent President George Weah, especially with no immediate plans, as I heard, of forming a very competent opposition alliance in order to pose a significant challenge or threat to his re-election prospect? Because some analysts are suggesting that the only way the opposition can win is by coming together, forming an alliance. How do you respond to that?
That analysis is absolutely wrong. The history of opposition winning here does not largely depend on opposition coming together. In 2017, the incumbent, our party, was defeated by Mr. Weah not putting together a very large coalition. And also, I'll tell you that the Unity Party has formed coalition. We are collaborating with several other political parties. Remember, there are about 42 political parties here and only 20 feeding candidates. We have about 7 or 8 of them, other parties that are not feeding presidential candidates, collaborating with us.
Muhammad Ali is the general secretary of the Unity Party. He spoke with me from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. Still in Liberia, a human rights lawyer and anti-graft campaigner says the extradition of Mohamed Touré, the former chief superintendent of the Sierra Leone police, is illegal and an affront to democracy. Attorney Tiawan Gunglo, who is also a presidential candidate of the opposition Liberia People's Party, says the action of the Liberia government violates its obligation to international law and its duties as a signatory to international human rights instruments. He warned that the decision to extradite Touré sets a dangerous precedent for opponents of the administration. His remarks come after the government extradited Touré to Sierra Leone, where he faces prosecution for his alleged involvement in a failed coup attempt in his home country, Sierra Leone, an accusation he denies. For more reaction to the extradition and its electoral prospects, I reach attorney Tiawan Gunglo.
The government was totally wrong because the action of the government violates its international obligation under international law. Liberia is a signatory to so many, almost all international human rights instruments. And by sending this man who came in our country to seek refuge because he was afraid of persecution in his country, the government of Liberia, by that act, flagrantly violated its obligation under several international instruments, including the Refugee Convention of 1951 and its protocol, its optional protocol of 1967.
What do you say to supporters who are of the view that for good neighborliness and for an apparent coup, an attempt to overthrow a legitimately elected government in Sierra Leone, your neighboring country, should weigh heavily, and that is what the government considered before deciding to accept the extradition request of Sierra Leone?
So let me say, even Liberians here in the 1980s under the military government of Samuel Doe, and ran into exile, they were accused of attempting to overthrow the government. They went to Ivory Coast, they went to Guinea, they went to Sierra Leone, and none of those countries returned these people who want to seek refuge in their country, although the government accused them of trying to carry on suppression. There is no excuse, you know, for what the government of Liberia did under international law. It is wrong. And all I can equate it to is that this is conspiratorial contract between President Mara Bio and President George Weah to sort of deal with people whom they consider to be their political opponents, in fact, enemies, not opponents.
So what do you say to those who are saying that your attempted effort to seek legal redress to prevent the government from extraditing the former police chief to Sierra Leone is just a publicity stunt to draw attention to yourself as a presidential candidate?
They are wrong because my whole life has been defending the rights of people, including those many of those who are in power today. The current chairman of the ruling party and many of the heavyweights were many times thrown into jail under President Sirleaf, and the first lawyer they always run to provide pro bono services for them when they were in a police station or in a magistrate court, because at that time they were broke, they didn't have money. I was always there to represent them. So my record in standing up for people is clear for all Liberians that know me. You can go on Google and search my record. So it's not what I'm doing now is something I would have done 20 years ago. So it's consistent with my position.
So realistically, what do you think your chances are to defeating the incumbent president in the upcoming presidential election in Liberia?
Those who live in Liberia know that this government has performed so terribly, and life has become difficult to live in Liberia to the extent that Liberia is now the 10th poorest country in the world, the number one dirtiest country in Africa, and people are finding it difficult to just find food. If you go to the government hospital, the number one hospital in Monterey, you can't even find a paracetamol. They tell you, give prescription until you go to a pharmacy across the road to buy drugs. I have a 10-point agenda for a better Liberia, and it's very attractive. I've gone to 330 towns in Liberia, and still going more. There's no presidential candidate in the history of Liberia who has even been to 50 towns before.
Tiawan Gonglo is a human rights lawyer and a presidential candidate of the opposition Liberia's People's Party. He spoke with me from the capital, Monrovia.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
In South Africa, leading opposition parties, including the Democratic Alliance and the Inkatha Freedom Party, or IFP, have agreed to form a coalition. The aim, representatives of the groups say, is to wrest power from the governing African National Congress, or ANC. At a recent two-day meeting, the opposition party's coalition, known as the Multi-Party Charter for South Africa, the groups agreed to form an alternative with shared principles for improving living standards. The move, analysts say, could pose a significant political threat to the ANC due to what they say has been the group's poor election performances in recent times across the country. The Opposition Alliance, representatives say, seeks to encourage prospective voters who have lost faith in the ruling party to register and vote for the opposition coalition. For more about the recently signed agreement and the electoral prospect of the coalition, I read Velenkosini Khlabisa. He is the president of the Inkatha Freedom Party and the leader of the official opposition in the KwaZulu-Natal legislature.
South Africa is in the brink of becoming a failed state. Crime levels are too high. Unemployment, load shedding has destroyed business. The economy of the country is becoming weaker and weaker. After 30 years, the ANC in government, poverty is increasing. The country as a whole is going down the drain. Things are falling apart. Everything is moving from better to bad and eventually to worse. The people of South Africa have lost hope. This charter for South Africa is a combination of the opposition bloc, first of its kind since 1994, something that's going to give hope to the people of South Africa, even those who have lost hope because of the failures of the government of the day.
You held a meeting a couple of days ago. What was the major outcome of this meeting? And do you think that the aim of toppling the ANC is feasible?
The purpose of the meeting over the past 2 days was to come out with a solid agreement between the opposition party to remove the government that has failed our country and its people, and agree on broad principles and values as well as priorities for the people of South Africa to once again rebuild their country. We achieved that goal out of the meeting of the past 2 days. The prospect of success is very great. The ANC is losing its support election after election, a coalition. But we do not want to be haphazard, because you only have 14 days to prepare government after election. That is why we let us start long in advance, so that we are not caught unprepared, as we see in some of the local municipalities like Johannesburg City is in tatters, the coalition, because it was haphazardly made, combining people with no agreed principles. We agreed on principles. All that we need to do is a massive mobilization of the 13 million unregistered voters to go and register.
The Inkatha Freedom Party used to be a strong ally of the ANC. What happened? Some of your critics are saying you have become a sellout.
Let me remind you, the IFP is in a coalition government in 13 municipalities with the Democratic Alliance. So now, what is new today? If in 2021 we entered into a coalition over 13 municipalities, those coalitions are still active as I'm speaking with you, making this coalition arrangement in preparation of the future. How would you regard as a betrayal? Because it's a continuation of what is there since 2021. And the people who have destroyed South Africa is the ANC. What would be a message if people are no longer willing to vote for the ANC and you approach them, you say, vote us to remove the ANC. And once they have voted you, you bring back the ANC behind the back door. That would be a real betrayal to the people of South Africa. Of course, we have had good relations with the ANC, but we are two different organizations sharing different views. Our past history should not bind us together in assisting the ANC to further destroy South Africa to become a failed state. That would not be true and the honest love of our country and the people of South Africa.
Valenkosini Klabisa is the president of the Inkatha Freedom Party and leader of the official opposition in the KwaZulu-Natal legislature. He spoke with me from Johannesburg, South Africa. The executive director of the Tanzania Constitutional Forum, or JUKATA, is calling on lawmakers from the governing Chama cha Mapinduzi party to stop dithering in the face of demands for a new constitution. Bob Wangwe says the government and ruling party lawmakers appear to have stalled the constitutional review process, despite what he says has been the popular demand to have a new constitution under President Samia Suluhu Hassan's administration. Local media reports Hassan has expressed interest in a new document. His remarks follow a recent meeting of stakeholders, including civil society, religious, academic, and political parties. The groups, Wangwe says, formed a united effort to focus their energies in the push for constitutional reform. Bob Wangwe tells me that the groups are singularly focused on pressuring the administration to restart the process, which he adds has been stalled since 2014.
A demand for Tanzanian constitution has actually been hesitation in terms of the decision from the lawmakers, such as the government, where there is a sort of a delaying tactics, because currently we're being told that the minister is about to initiate programs that will enhance the constitution literacy. But we know that all the people in Tanzania, where there was a process in which we were participated in giving some views, and there was a process where the draft constitutions were made. But it was only the process that it actually hindered the process of getting the new constitution, just because there was a deficit in terms of consensus.
Some people are saying that there's not really a groundswell of support for a new constitution in Tanzania. What do you say to that?
That's an opinion. But actually, for me, I think the government is not ready to give Tanzanians the constitution at this moment. I don't know when they think they can do that. But the process, actually, the government or the president appointed a task force which collected views from Tanzanians. And we actually proposed some ways on how we can get the constitution at this period before 2025. Because this thing that the constitution process making, which has been stolen, you might think that it might take a long time to be completed, but I think the government itself is not ready to make this move so that the Tanzanians can get their constitution.
Are you saying that there's a delay tactics and that even though the president, Samia Suluhu Hassan, has committed to the new constitution, the government is still unwilling to move forward, the process forward, or expedite it?
Sure. Now it's almost 2 years now since Samia Suluhu Hassan got into power. But there's nothing which has been taken on board. The substantial step which has been taken on board so that the process can move forward. You might see 2 months ago, no, 3 months ago, she directed the Office of Registrar of Political Parties to initiate or to convene the constitutional stakeholders so that they can initiate the process. But till now, nothing has been taken as a process of doing that. So we can now see that maybe probably this can be a tactic of delaying to initiate the process of making constitution for Tanzanians.
But Bob, some people are suggesting so-called lack of unity or divergent views about how to achieve a new constitution in Tanzania is undermining efforts, or it's not helping with Jukate's push for a new constitution. Your take?
Yeah, sure. That's one of the reasons why we are not moving forward, because we are not united. Maybe because of differences in terms of views and approaches on how we can go forward. That's why Jukwaa la Katiba Tanzania, we convened a meeting and of stakeholders. We brought their political parties, including Chadema, which is actually the main opposition party in Tanzania, and also all the political parties were present, and also the civil society organizations, religious groups, so that we can make a consensus and discuss on how best we can move forward. So this is the step for making a unity so that we can go further in terms of demanding the new constitution.
Bob Wangwe is the executive director of the Tanzania Constitutional Forum, or JUCATA. He spoke with me from the Tanzanian commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. The president of the NGO called Empowering Communications has authored a new book entitled Outside Eden's Gate, The Secrets of Self-Empowerment. The organization is dedicated to using communications for positive social change. Greg Pirio, a former journalist who served as chief of the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, talks about his experience using communications to empower people around the world, including Africa. To learn more about the book and what inspired him to write it, as well as its anticipated impact on readers, I reach Greg Pirio.
I had been involved as a journalist using the media and communications to empower people, end bloody conflicts, and live healthy lives. And I had done that and had big impact in a number of conflict zones in Africa and elsewhere. But while I was doing this on a vast scale, I also realized that there was something in my life that I wasn't happy in my personal and professional life. And I needed to look inward and to see how I could create more peace and joy in my own life. I had to learn more effective life skills and leave behind habitual ways of thinking that weren't working for me. And so self-empowerment is basically developing new ways of thinking and being in the world. And that unleashes our creativity, at least my creativity in other ways in my personal life. And so with that creativity, you can design the life that you really want to live. And so that was part of my journey.
So what do you mean by secrets that's included in the title of your book?
Well, the secrets are basically the lessons I learned in my own journey to self-empowerment. in the book, I'm sharing them so that others can learn from my experience and have the opportunity to apply them on their own life's journey. Let me give you some example of one of them. I learned along the way that I often held myself back when things didn't go right. It is, you know, I would feel sorry for myself and blame others for the situation I was in. And this, what I call self-pity, I had to learn to let that go because that was making me a victim. And so when I began to do that more and more, I became personally responsible for my situation, and I could take the actions I needed to change it. So when we're caught up in like that negative paradigm like that, we don't see all the opportunities around us. We're focused on the negative. So that's an example. One more thing is that I have a companion book called The Self-Empowerment GPS. And for each secret, there are activities and questions to ask yourself to help you.
In The Secrets of Self-Empowerment, who talk a lot about achieving self-love, why is this even pertinent?
Well, self-love is basically occurs when we understand how essentially worthy we are, that we recognize our inner beauty and brilliance. Everybody is that way. Everybody is an amazing human being, but the way oftentimes we're brought up, we don't know that. We don't understand our own self-worth. And so as you empower yourself, like I did in my journey, I learned to love myself and understanding that you're lovable. And this is the farthest thing in the world from being selfish. When you have self-love, you actually radiate that into the world. You interact with people in a different way. You encourage their own sense of worthiness, and you acknowledge their brilliance. You're not in competition with them, et cetera, et cetera.
Where can people buy copies of your books?
Okay, now the books are available in paperback and electronic form from Amazon. And you can reach that by going to Amazon directly or by going to my website, gregperio.com. And if you don't have access to, some of your listeners don't have access to Amazon, they could ask a local bookstore to order copies for them. And also I have a YouTube channel, Greg Perio, and on it there are a lot of discussions and links to my website and podcast, and people can also find my presence on, I think, virtually every social media platform. So I've taken some of the skills I learned in as a journalist and in broadcasting and applying to promoting these ideas and promoting my books.
Greg Perio is the president of the NGO called Empowering Communications. He spoke with me from here in Washington. This is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotier, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs and Music from African Collection. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sport. The World Athletics Championships got underway on Saturday in Budapest as over 2,000 athletes from 202 nations converged on the Hungarian capital for 9 days of fierce competition from the 19th to the 27th of August. Gudev Serge of Ethiopia won a dramatic women's 10,000 meters at the World Championships after race leader Sifan Hassan of the Netherlands stumbled and fell about 20 meters from the finish line. Sergei, the reigning world 5,000 meters champion, pulled up tightly beside Hassan down the home stretch, and the two ran shoulder to shoulder before the Dutch woman's crash, leaving Sergei to cross alone in a time of 31 minutes 27.18 seconds to lead an Ethiopian medal sweep. World record holder Letisebet Gide was second in 31 minutes 28.16 seconds, while Ijagaihu Taye won the bronze medal in 31 minutes 28.31 31 seconds. In basketball, the winner of the FIBA Olympic pre-qualifying tournament in Lagos will be decided on Sunday, August 20th between Cameroon and Senegal, who both successfully came out on top in Saturday's semifinals. After 8 games played over the course of the last 5 days in Nigeria's largest city, Lagos, both nations remain unscathed in the build-up to their most important game of the year. The winner of Sunday's final will pick the only ticket on offer for African teams at the FIBA Olympic pre-qualifying tournament, Paris 2024. In football news, former champions Orlando Pirates returned to the CAF Champions League, got off to a great start with a vital 1-0 away win over Jabal FC in the Comoros in the first leg of the preliminary round of the competition on Saturday. In another afternoon fixture, Namibia's African stars shone bright when they emerged victorious over Zambia's Power Dynamos with a 2-1 win, and the match played in Soweto's Dobsonville Stadium in South Africa. Meanwhile, in Mali, Real Bamako were unlucky not to go get a victory at home after an evenly balanced encounter with Cotton Sport Dugaru of Cameroon concluded in a 0-0 stalemate. In Sierra Leone, Bo Rangers played out a 1-1 draw against Liberia's LISCRFC, while Rwanda's APR were also held to a 1-1 draw at home against Somalia's Gadieka FC. Staying with football news, Victor Osimhen, Nigerian international, started off where he left off for his club Napoli in the Italian Serie A with a brazen Saturday's 3-1 victory at promoted Frosinone, which gave the champions a winning start to their Serie A title defense. Nigerian striker Osimhen netted in each half to help ensure the champions came from behind to win on Rudy Garcia's debut as coach following the resignation of new Italy boss Luciano Spalletti. And that's all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. This week, the international focus will be on Africa, not only because of the crisis in Niger or the continuing war in the Sudan, but because of the convening of the BRICS summit that will be held at the Union Building in Pretoria, South Africa. The host of the meeting will be the President of South Africa, Cyril Ramaphosa. The holding of this important summit in Africa, it itself is very, very welcome. It shows that Africa is emerging as a state that takes part in all kinds of discussions globally, not always taking the back seat. The group, since it was formed in 2009, has made it clear that as an emerging economic group, drawn mainly from the global south, that it does not intend to rival or set aside existing binding institutions such as the Bretton Woods Institution, the World Bank, and the IMF. It, however, is determined to look at ways to improve the lives of the people of the Global South. The group intends to ensure that multilateralism is widely accepted globally. In recent past, many commentators have ridiculed the United Nations principle of the sovereign equality of member states. Of course, the Charter is a where there are big, medium, and small states. But the essence of the comment is the Charter expects mutual respect by all members of the organization and the global community, even though they are not equal economically. The group represents the international community. The B in BRIC represents Brazil from Latin America. The R represents Europe. The I and the C represent two giants of Asia. And the S is South Africa. Africa, the only member of Africa in the group. The group also wants to ensure that what it calls BRIC Plus means outside of the group, they could have other interested member states. And for this coming summit this week, the South African president has invited 40 or so other African heads of state along with other representatives of the Global South. The idea is to someday broaden the scope of it. For example, this summit will will examine carefully the criteria for the addition new members. Thus far, roughly 20 member states outside of the group have planned to become members. So by the end of the summit, it is likely that the number of 5 will increase. The group also wants to make sure that what it does is not misinterpreted. There are those who believe that the group was set up mainly for the interests of few big members of it. They said this is not the case. They also want it to be known that they are prepared to move ahead despite any people once who are trying to criticize it. So for Africans who are going to watch this summit, I urge all of you to really be vigilant in watching for yourselves the proceedings and speeches and decisions of the group. Do not depend on interpretation of the summit from others who may not have the direct interest of the Global South. Look at the group itself. The BRIC group today constitutes 40% of the world population and 34% of GDP. How on earth can such a group, world range of the Global South, be ignored? And there are those who say that the group as it stands has members who have serious divergent views on a wide range of international problems. It's true. But what other institution does not have? The BRIC group favors diversity. It is attached to the principle of Confucius. Diversity in harmony. Having smaller and smaller groups meet with the same views is not helpful for the maintenance of international peace and security. Others have said, what has BRIC established or achieved since it was formed in 29. Look at Brazil, South Africa, India, China, what they have achieved in terms of cooperation and development. Look at the setting up of the new development bank, now with headquarters in Beijing, and the chief executive officer, a former president of Brazil, Lula Rousseff. Very balanced, very representative. So this is what you will be watching this week. There may be disagreement, but that is normal. So in the words of a famous song, I hope the international community this week will watch the meeting and Africans would allow this group who represents the Global South should do things in their own way. I thank you.
That was one month's point of view, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs.
Girl, I wanna take you around the world. Yeah. Chris Moon, baby.
It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
I wonder which part of this world that you came from. You got a nice looking body, original woman. I wanna call you my lady, my classic. Tell me, what does it really take to know you, lady? How long does it really take to get close to you, my African baby, my beautiful baby, my African woman. You're my African baby, you're my African lady, you're. African lady, you're
1,000. I make tower and talk say I know they do. As she shake a fever bingo, watch me wait at the shoe. Gally title now you hola. Nobody no go take her. You sabi make it enough. Nothing no go cola. But she go be me mort. You know me what I ought. You don't engage mistakes. You don't make a fool you got. Anytime I say I know they do, tell me but search you mort. Just take a say na joke cause I can be naughty a lot. Baby stop, now you bing bing. You sabi hold me limping. Talk not in a me yes. Make me step in crispy base. King you is canny ya me. Make go fetch my medali. Make a slap off from the bien. Show me say you back some. Baby stop, now you bing bing.
I can't take control of myself, baby. Makuma boy, me bang, bang, bang. Me throw and I say, me now my own corner, me in soon, baby. Enka, Mr. Playboy, yeah. Kapani send a me more by my makuma boy, me bang, bang, bang. But this feeling is so different. What reason will I give my heart if I should let you go, baby? Cause I wanna know you. Thank you, sweetie. Me pass me new deal. Come walk it away, baby. I share my suicide, see me. Yeah, what my come on, nana say. Cause someone stole the stars from the sky and put them in your eyes.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here in the service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, do not think because the water is calm, there are no crocodiles. I'm your host, Peter Clote in Washington. Good evening, Africa. I